numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Morning, welcome in. We are presented by BetMGM. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander today. We got a fun show because we have sports that are underway right now. The Open Championship is, of course, underway over there at Royal Liverpool. Is that right? Is
yep,
that
you got it.
Okay, thank you. I know there's a lot of Royals. I wanted to make sure I got it right. And we do have quite the round that is underway. A lot of happy people. I will give you the floor, Kelly, to pronounce the last name of our amateur.
Who is at top of the leaderboard? Crystal Lamprecht?
Okay.
Something like that.
Dude, is he like 6'8"? Is that what I read early this morning?
I have no idea.
Confirm that for me, because I was reading something where the dude is like supposedly massive. I did not get to see his round. I did get to see co-leader, though, Tommy Fleetwood come in.
Let's go.
With a 5-under, so let's get this thing done. We're rooting home many things here. First off, I got the outright on Fleetwood to win this whole thing at about 30-1. It's like 30-50. Seeing Najad, who came on Tuesday, part of his group of first-round leaders that he gave out was Tommy Fleetwood at about 35-1, so hopefully that gets home for him. You got in on a piece of that as well,
yep.
So we're hoping that that's going to be the case. I love this, too, because first off, I'm filling in on the mornings. It's going to be going on the entire time, so that's going to be fantastic. But what are some of the early takeaways from what we've seen here today, Kelly? Because I got to tell you, my takeaways, my untrained golf eye, when you're watching this, first off, you guys nailed it. The driving accuracy, you don't really understand how bad this rough is going to be until you see guys get into it. We were talking about Wyndham Clark. I think it was like a 13 or 14. If you just look at the scorecard, like, oh, it's a bogey. You called it one of the best bogeys you're ever going to see, yeah. Which I would agree. He's in the rough. He like duffs it. It goes like a foot. He goes from rough to rough. And then he somehow saves a bogey, which I thought was a brilliant move by him. But some of these guys, when you get into that, is it fescue? Like, yep. Man, it is tough to get out of that stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Now, I think Wyndham Clark, and I know Matt Brown had some bets on him. I don't think he bet him outright, but I know he had some bets on it. And Rory, John Rahm, Justin Rose just teeing off. Yep. Both Rory and Rahm actually in the long stuff themselves off of the first hole. Wyndham Clark, though, I mean, hey, this is a guy that he was incredibly exciting to bet early in the year. He was playing really good golf. I was betting him then, kind of backed off then after he won the U.S. Open. Odds obviously get adjusted on a guy like that. I wasn't really willing to go back to bat with him this week, even though he was highly rated in some of my models. I know Matt did. But this guy puts together, he goes even through the first nine and then picks up four birdies on the back nine with that one bogey that you just talked about. I mean, really impressive 3-under par for him to get his day started. Tommy Fleetwood, as you mentioned, I do have a first-round leader bet on him, but that is he had a heck of a day. I mean, you're talking about four birdies on the back nine. You're seeing some success on the back nine from these guys so far. And the conditions aren't bad, right? This is the day we talked about, yep. JVT. If you were probably going to be the best day of the four that these guys were going to get, and it's sure looking like that. It's bright and sunny out there. No rain, but you still got kind of some wet grass from yesterday in the past couple days where it did rain, so it should make scoring conditions a little bit easier. It's windy, but it's not brutal yet. These guys need to take advantage right now. This is the time to go low. So, I think those are my big thoughts so far throughout the day, just checking out the rest of the leaderboard here. You know, I think no surprise on some of these other names that you're seeing near the top. Our boy Decky went 1-under. Brooks, I thought, had a heck of a round. He was 2-over par at one point.
I only watched like an hour. I'm going to have the same complaint I always do. Show my guy some more.
Oh, yeah.
I need a little bit more variety with some of the golfers were showing. I saw like Mats at one point, they just like flash over him real quick. It was like a 2-foot birdie putt, and like that was it. And then I was like I didn't see him the rest of the time.
I'm still waiting to see Siwoo Kim, who
right.
I've got plenty of bets on. He's 2-under par. I haven't seen a single shot of him since coverage came on at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific time on USA. It was a lot better before that on Peacock. If you've been watching since they switched over to USA, I'd say it's been about 40% commercial time and 60% golf.
Yeah, I'm not and you know what? I kind of appreciate to a certain extent, like we're watching right now, the commercial like in-action break,
yeah.
Or whatever it is. But I would agree with you. I felt like I was like, man, like, what are we doing? Like, let's get some footage here. I want to watch these.
You know what it is, John? What they're going to do is they're going to do that nice, like on Sunday, where they're going to be like, your final hour and a half presented by insert whatever is brought to you commercial free.
Right.
And you're gonna be like, oh, this is really cool. But no, they banked all the commercial time right now.
Like top 40 hits. the next hour on 98.5 exactly. The Jam, commercial free. Yeah, something like that. But it has been, it's been a fun tournament. The weather doesn't look too bad. Like, there is some wind. You can see the long rough blowing around. Siwoo Kim misses, what was that, about
par
a
putt.
Yeah, was that a par?
Yeah, it was a par.
Okay, all right. So Siwoo Kim's going to have about a 1.5 foot putt for bogey. You'd think he's going to sink that. You mentioned some of the names that stuck out when watching. Jordan Spieth with a somewhat decent day, although on the final hole, on his approach, got a little errant, ends up bogeying on 18. So for the most part, a pretty solid day. That's a pretty, I wouldn't call them wild swings, but doubled on 8, bogeyed on 18. So with Jordan Spieth, 2 under, one of the big names that are out there. And one of the things I know that you're sweating out, Kelly, Cam Smith's day could have looked a lot worse if he doesn't sink about, like, a 20-foot putt, yeah. Putt for par, right around 13 or 14. He's at 1 over par. That was one of the popular plays I know amongst you long shots crews going against Cam Smith, so that's off to a good start. T44, 1 over and done for the day after shooting a 72. And I think that's about it. I mean, you look at some of these other names that are further down. You know, we talked about Justin Thomas through one. It's just getting started. But that was one of the names I think Matt Eumanns I talked to about brought up. He's like, I don't want any part of Thomas.
Yeah.
Rough start to the day so far for Thomas. So that's going to be great to watch as we kind of roll through this thing. But so far, I understand why I love this thing so much. Early mornings, starts at like, what, midnight our time or whatever it is. You wake up, you got the round to watch the rest of the day until I don't know what time, but it's going to be fantastic. So, good start to the Open Champ. There's my guy.
Yeah,
can we turn up the sound? Come on. Let's go. There's my guy, Tommy.
Final tee times are 8:16 our time. So, yeah, you've got golf going all morning, basically. Mm-hmm. We'll wrap this up around noonish our time.
And really quick, just the update right now. Again, a lot of guys have yet to start. But if, for those who are interested, Tommy Fleetwood is now your co-favorite with Rory McIlroy at 7-1 over at DraftKings. -165 to finish inside of the top 10. Some of the other notable ones, Scottie Scheffler. We should mention him really quickly because he got off to a little bit of a rough start earlier today. The putter was kind of letting him down. You're like, ooh, what's going to happen? Only that was like 8, 12, and 14. He went to that stretch where he bogeyed those three holes. But ultimately comes out 1 under and still looks like the machine that he can be. So,
yeah, on the verge. I think this is also just a good reminder. This is always something with golf. But we talk about betting some of these guys live. Sometimes you don't even have to wait till they teed off, right? Like, yep. Tyrrell Hatton's one of the guys I'm very high on this week. He hasn't even teed off. You can get him at a better number now than you could have gotten him at before the tournament started.
So, I am always amazed by that. Like, it goes back to my conversations about futures, like in the NBA and Major League Baseball. You know, like, if a guy gets injured during a season, but you know it's an injury that he's going to come back from. So I use Philadelphia as an example because this was a good one last year where there was that stretch where Embiid, Harden, and Tyrese Maxey all suffered injuries around the same time, and they moved him down to like near 30-1 to win an NBA Finals. But all the prognosis, like, they'll all be back in like 3 weeks.
Right, yeah.
And so to that point too, why would a guy's probability of winning a tournament lessen if he hasn't even started playing yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can make more of a case for it when you get an outlier. Let's say Tommy went 8 under,
right.
Something like that, right? Like, you'd be like, okay, that's a heck of a start for a good player. I don't think 5 under from Fleetwood, because, sorry, I'm going to throw out the amateur, who is 6'8", by the way.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Dude, giant, wow.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to throw out his scorecard, though, because he ain't winning the Open Championship. But so
back on Monday when he wins this thing.
The books are showing some respect for Tommy. I think that's what it is, but I'm surprised 5 under, at least in the conditions that they're playing in today, is enough to do that to some of these golfers.
Yeah, and look, maybe there's somebody that's much smarter at probabilities than I am that would actually say, well, actually, the probability does lower even though he hasn't played. So maybe there is something out there. I'm willing to be wrong on that, but that does surprise me. How much, let me ask you this. So, like you said, you're surprised at the 5 under. How much does the skew of Tommy Fleetwood play in essentially, not a home course, but playing across the pond in settings that he's more comfortable, how much does that weigh into some of these odds? Like, even just narratively,
outright-wise,
right.
Which you have a bet on, it's huge because the guy doesn't win in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
he only wins over in Europe.
It is pretty interesting to see the dynamic because I do bet him a lot. Like, 30-1 to win this thing. In other spots, you're getting him, like, in other tournaments here, it's like 50, 60-1, somewhere around there in that range. You know, maybe 40, but generally, that's kind of the price you're seeing on him as opposed to, like, 30-28-1.
That all just depends field, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's in a much tougher field. He's as in tough of a field as you're going to play in all year right now, right? But his odds are shorter and probably, you know, 20 points shorter because he's playing this course in an Open Championship in England.
I like it. By the way, we should note, because we just got nerding out over the Open Championship, we do have a good show on tap for you today. Joe Sheehan's going to be with us coming up in 30 minutes. Of course, the author of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. It'd be weird if he wasn't the author of that one. We'll talk a little Major League Baseball. And with that, I wanted to transition very quickly. And I won't take the Angels angle. I promise I won't here. But this is the big story, as the New York Yankees do get swept by the Anaheim Angels out there in California. And a rough stretch now for the Yankees. How about this now? 15-22 since losing Aaron Judge. A batting average as a team of .218. And you're seeing guys over the line in this series alone. Look, again, I like the Angels. But guys like Griffin Canning and Patrick Sandoval are going out there and holding this Yankees lineup down and looking pretty good while doing it. A pretty poor series out there in Southern California for the Yankees. And especially as you approach trade deadline time, is this going to be a team that buys or sells? Aaron Boone the other day gave out a vague report on Aaron Judge that said he's close, whatever that means. Look, they're only 3.5 games out right now, so that has extended out a little bit. You're not dead by any stretch, but as we're getting closer to a deadline in which teams have to decide, are we buying, are we selling, are we staying put, and if we are going to buy or sell, what's the status of our health, our best player that our lineup is built around? The Yankees find themselves in an interesting position where, at least at this point right now, a playoff berth might not be the most probable outcome for New York, especially with the teams and the way that they're playing in front of them. But a good series for the Angels, and a good series in the big narrative at Major League Baseball, of course, which is the Angels trying to do their best to keep Shohei Ohtani and winning some of these games, of course, and improving their playoff positioning will do just that for them. So the Angels yesterday, +120 underdog at home, get an early afternoon win or early evening win, 7-3 over the Yankees. All right, we'll come back. We have plenty left to get to. The World Cup is underway. We already had a massive upset today, so let's talk about that. And speaking of massive, we'll note as well a big injury for one of the top teams and one of the favorites to win the Golden Boot. We'll discuss that and more when we come back here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. It's got all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms. Got to be 21 and in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, 1-800-522-4700 is the number. All right, some of the big names just getting their day started. Rory McIlroy with a par on one after he misread his putt for birdie. And a little left, so we'll keep an eye on the Open Championship as the day moves along. I wanted to note two things in the World Cup action, which did get started for us very early today at about midnight Pacific time and 3 a.m. for those of you on the East Coast. So the first of which is already a pretty big upset. So in one of the first matches, New Zealand goes out, gets a 1-0 win over Norway. Norway closed at about -250 at multiple shops. Some spots open -314 on the three-way line for Norway. New Zealand as high as +874 on the open. Closed at about 660, 670, so near 7-1. So a very big upset already at the start of group play for the women. New Zealand gets that 1-0 win. An identical 1-0 win for Australia as well. The news here, twofold. First off, Aussies were about a $2.10 favorite, so at least the result is what we expected, although I think the degree of the result, a lot more, I think a lot of people thought maybe that was going to be a little bit easier for them. But the news around the Australians is that striker Sam Kerr, who we actually talked about the other day with Drew Dinsick, who's about 7-1 to win the Golden Boot, most goals scored in this tournament, is going to miss the opening two matches of the Women's World Cup. So that includes the one that they just played. And, of course, the one coming up, that would be July 27th against Nigeria, suffered a calf injury in training ahead of the tournament. So they came down late yesterday. But a big blow for not only them, but again, when you're talking about top goal scorer, a big blow there, and it shakes up the market because that was one of the top options at the top of the board.
What's interesting about that, though, JVT, is I know why I just updated these odds. The top two, Alex Morgan and Sophia Smith, I don't think their odds changed at all from what we were looking at.
That's a good point.
Because Kerr was +750, third on the list. You would think those two would get shorter at the top.
Yeah. What is, do you have the entire list in front of you? I do wonder, I'd have to, we'll ask Paul Carr about this, you know, coming up later. Obviously, two games is a pretty big deal, and especially two games, which, I mean, just judging, you know, I don't know about the power rating status of Australia, but judging by their power rating, probably going to be favored over Nigeria in their matchup on July 27th.
Yeah.
Two opportunities to really score a lot of goals, but obviously you could still win this thing if you win your group, make a deep run. Do you wonder what the adjusted odds would be on her? Because you can't take her out entirely because she is coming back.
25-1 is what she moves back to. So Alex Morgan, yes, was 4-1 yesterday. So remains exactly the same. So Fia Smith does go from +650 to +600, but still not much movement there.
Colin Morikawa out in the rough all by himself. You made it, by the way.
I do have a first-round leader bet on him and Justin Rose, but they're both off to bad starts as well.
You want to share your observation with this first tee with everybody else?
Oh, I don't know. Just from the past few groups that we've seen tee off, everybody's gone hit it right and far right. I think Rory, I didn't get to see his second shot, but I think he hit it so far right, he actually ended up having a decent lie because everything was probably trampled down over there, and he was able to get on the green, actually had a look for birdie.
Yes, seems to be playing all right. Five under, would you say five under?
Rahm's going right.
Yep, Rahm's going right here on two.
Yep. All these guys having trouble. Yeah, so I do have, what do I have pending here? I have Rose and Morikawa. The first round leader bets I made were Fleetwood, Siwoo Kim. Siwoo not going to get there. Morikawa, Justin Rose. And I told the guys downstairs, I think Hovland would be a decent bet. A lot of this stuff you can bet live. You know, especially if you're over on the East Coast. I think with the conditions like they are right now, you're not getting much rain. The wind isn't massive. If you're, I would look for a pure ball striker and just hope he runs pure with the putter here today. I actually think this 500 could be beat by one of these guys here in the later wave.
Golf talk. Our bosses love it. It's important, all right? It's a major. We got to keep our eye on this thing. All right, with that, coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to talk a little more Major League Baseball big picture. We'll talk with Joe Sheehan about the New York Yankees and what we're expecting of them. And maybe we'll go over a little bit of the results last night because we did get some series finalized. You know, Cardinals get a good sweep. Rangers sweep the Rays. So they're continuing to at least get off to a pretty good start here in the second half after stumbling into the All-Star break, the Rangers, and keeping their distance from the Houston Astros, which is also a very big deal. And how about this from last night too, just a quick mention, the Baltimore Orioles now tied for first place in the American League East with the Tampa Bay Rays after they beat the Dodgers, and the Rays of course get swept by the Texas Rangers. So with that, a lot of interesting NFL markets that are up, and as we get closer to the NFL season, there's different ways to approach these and have good conversations about them. And I think this is one of the more interesting conversations that are out there, which is odds to have the fewest regular season wins, worst record. Last year, of course, the Chicago Bears get that honor, I think. Yeah, that's an honor. You got the first overall pick. You traded it for some stuff. So, not surprising, Arizona Cardinals are your favorite to finish with the fewest regular season wins. They are sitting at 2-1. The Buccaneers are at 8-1, as are the Houston Texans. The Rams are at 950, which I am kind of surprised by. I get after last season and whatnot and the injury concerns from Matthew Stafford, but they still got some stuff. I'm surprised the odds are that short. And then you get into the double digits. Commanders, 10-1. Raiders, 12-1. Titans and Colts at 14-1. Patriots at 15-1. The disrespect. And the Giants at 20-1 would also stress shop around. So one of the teams that you and I both have bets on, did you bet that too? The Tennessee Titans?
I've only bet two. I'm pretty sure me and you have shared both of them.
You're right. So, like, if you shop around, like, the Tennessee Titans were 21-1 to have the worst record in the NFL. If you can find that, you can shop around. There was Circa who had that. I'm going to get the updated odds for you because since then they did get DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think that would change much for you.
I checked on the day of, and it didn't really change at all. Okay. But, yeah, I mean, you would think it's some shop out there probably got a little bit longer, but Jim, I don't know about you. The bet really doesn't change for me because the bet is at some point Ryan Tannehill is not going to be playing this season, and you're going to be hitting the restart button basically on this team. Mm-hmm. That's the bet for me. So I don't really think that whether it's if you've got Levis out there starting games now, I don't really think it's going to completely change the course of their season, most likely in a positive direction, regardless if DeAndre Hopkins is there or not. So at 20-1, I mean, you're finding those kind of numbers on it. Yeah, I think it's a good bet. The Cardinals at 2-1, I don't even know if those odds are that far off, JVT. Like, it is – the Cardinals roster is brutal. Like, they are deserving to be the short shot in this market. But man, I think there's a lot of teams. I think there's a lot of candidates. This is one of my favorite markets to bet every year. But I guess I think there's a lot of candidates you can find at longer odds that have almost just as good of a chance to have a terrible, terrible season.
Yeah, and if you look at some of the projections for like a team like Arizona, because like generally with these kind of markets, I'm always asking like, all right, you know, I'll always start personally with, should the team be favored? Like, should they be favored to this degree? Because clearly there's a gap between Arizona and the team there. They have, by projected win totals, the 22nd easiest schedule, or what is that, the 10th or 11th hardest schedule by that measure coming into next season. And, of course, no Kyler Murray to start the year. You don't know when he's going to come back, if he's going to come back, because that's the thing, too. Why rush it? And spots like the Superbook have lines that have, for every single line, weeks 1 through 18, they are projected at this point right now, the Arizona Cardinals, to be an underdog in every single game this season. The shortest number that they would catch would be that week 10 to 14 stretch, projected to be a 2-point underdog at home against Atlanta, 3-point underdog on the road against Houston, and a 1.5-point underdog at home against Los Angeles Rams. So on the surface, this looks like this is going to be a season in which the Cardinals, rightfully so, are in the driver's seat, essentially, for the worst record in the National Football League. This is one where I kind of find it actually kind of hard to poke a hole in this because,
oh sure, yes,
you know,
yeah,
because it does look pretty bad. The roster is in really bad shape, despite Steve Keim going on Colin Cowherd's show. I don't know if you saw this the other day, but like, you know, Kyler Murray, it's a big pressure season for him. Like, he tore his ACL in December, bro, yeah. And you actually destroyed the roster with your moves.
Right.
I don't know what you're talking about. So this looks like a pretty bleak scenario for Arizona. But when you're talking about reasons that we made our bets, I'm looking at like the wide outcome of seasons for these teams, and I think more often than the market is saying, especially at 21-1, a Titans season can go south pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of depth. There can be bad quarterback play that can start early. I get that Vrabel is a guy that maximizes his roster. It's why it's 21-1 and not like 8-1. But I have a feeling that this season can get pretty bad for Tennessee, and one of the worst outcomes could be worst record. And by the way, if you're in that range, you might be pretty motivated, Kelly, because pretty good quarterback available at the top of the draft.
Yep, totally. I mean, it would be interesting if they drafted, would it be quarterback 3 years in a row then if they went that? But I don't hate on that at all. If you don't have the guy, go get the right guy. I do think I like the Raiders though even better. I like the Raiders better than the Titans back, because I mean that I think this Raiders team could end up being an absolute disaster this year, and there's a chance. I don't know how you are, what your stance is on the Denver Broncos. I'm not in the camp of, oh, watch out for the full bounce back season, but
I think they're a playoff team.
I think there's a possibility of that, and if you're talking that, then you're talking the Raiders are in an extremely tough division with a team that I don't think has a whole ton of upside.
Yep, I would completely agree with that. That quarterback depth chart, dude, like razor's edge, man. If Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to play.
Jacobs isn't showing up? Like, what are you doing?
Yep, I would completely agree with that. All right, we'll take our break. Coming back, Major League Baseball with Joe Sheehan. We'll talk about the trade deadline, what some of these teams are going to do, and what the second half looks like as we move forward for teams like the Yankees, who are in a little bit of a bad position after getting swept by a team like the Angels.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You only got a little bit of time left to get in on our VSiN summer special. Offer ends July 31st. What is it? Well, it's the NFL betting guide. Our VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our crew provides profiles of every team, advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures, season win totals, and more. Sign up before the end of July. You're going to receive both guides, full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl, and an early bird discount, $175, or check it out for $19 up at VSiN.com/subscribe. Always stress everything we do. Golf tournaments in between them, you get the content. NBA guide when it comes out, you get the content. College basketball betting guide when it comes out, you get the content. Everything we do. So make sure you check that out at vsin.com/subscribe. Also worth checking out, of course, Joe Sheehan's newsletter. Make sure you check that out, the Joe Sheehan Baseball newsletter. You can follow him on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan, who's nice enough to give us some time here today. Joe, it is great to talk to you. And I, you know what? I was reading your newsletter from yesterday, and I could not agree more. I'm an Angels fan. You noted the Phil Nevin interview during Sunday Night Baseball where they're asking him in the dugout about trading away Shohei Ohtani and the narrative around it. And I think you make the greatest point of all, and it's something I've been saying, which is if many people believe, because everybody keeps thinking the Angels are going to lose him for nothing, if he's gone in the offseason, there's no need to sacrifice assets if you're some of these teams like the Padres or the Dodgers who have a pretty good shot at signing him. Just sit back and wait. I would agree with you. I don't think they're going to move him. I think Artie Moreno is pretty stubborn in that. And I also think a series like they just played against the Yankees kind of helps that out, right? Because now they can make the case like we're a wild card team, or at least we're competing for one.
Right. If you go back to that game that we're talking about on Sunday Night Baseball, the Angels at that point, I think, were 6.5 out of a playoff berth. Yep. If they had lost that game, now you're getting to a point like 5 games is really the line I was looking at. But they win that game, then they go out and they take 3 from the Yankees. Now they're, I believe it's within 3 games of the Yankees, within 4.5 of the wild card berth. It would take a long losing streak. Now, it's still the 20th. Things can still happen here. But I'm with you. I don't think they wanted to trade him, and it was going to take them falling all the way out of the race to do it.
So one of my things has kind of been, and I don't think this is going to happen, but Joe, can you make the case if I'm assuming the Angels want to retain him, right? They want to sign him into his lengthy extension. Like, don't you make the case if you're the Angels front office, like screw talking about selling, why don't they buy a little bit at the deadline? You're only 4.5 games out. Why not try to make this push? And in turn, yes, are you taking a risk, but you're showing Ohtani, we are willing to go in. We want to build something here with you. Even if the chance is small, we want to buy so that we, like, you know, we're trying here. Is that not a possibility at all?
It's no question they should be doing that. I mean, the only chance they have to retain Ohtani long-term is if they prove to him they can win with Ohtani in Anaheim. That means getting to the playoffs. And as you know, it means making this team better, becoming a buyer. The biggest problem is that this isn't a very good farm system.
Yep.
It's rarely been a good farm system over the last 10 years. And it's better than it was in the middle of the last decade. But they don't have any of the really high-end prospects you would use to get high-end talent. Not that there's not a whole lot of high-end talent on this market, but if you're even talking about getting a Marcus Stroman or an Eduardo Rodriguez, maybe going out and adding a bat or two because they've had so many injuries, they just don't have the talent to do it.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed the sweep over the last couple of days, and also there was a great tweet that was shipping around. It was along the lines of, you know, we keep talking about Ohtani getting sold off. Maybe it's the Yankees who should ship off Gerrit Cole because they're in a pretty dangerous position. All right, so let's focus on them for a second because obviously, you know, it's a very intense market and there's a lot of pressure on Aaron Boone and the Yankees. What have you made of Boone? The decisions that he's made over the last couple of days, and just overall where the Yankees find themselves? Because what are they now? 15-22 without Aaron Judge, hitting about .218 without him since he's been injured. This is a team that's obviously very much in danger of missing out on a postseason berth entirely. What is the Yankee strategy moving forward, you think?
Well, I would have a hard time blaming Boone for what he has here. He's had a waiver wire in the outfield for a couple of months now. He's got a good bullpen, but obviously they've had some shakiness there that hasn't been there in previous years. Hasn't had Carlos Rodon for much of the year. Josh Donaldson has been terrible and injured, which last I checked is a pretty bad combination. Mm-hmm. I don't think I can pin this on Boone. I think the front office has kind of set this up. Now, I don't want to fire Brian Cashman either, but you have to look at the Donaldson trade, which included Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, the DJ LeMahieu second contract, the Giancarlo Stanton trade, the Carlos Rodon signing. Nothing they've done in the last 5 years has really worked all that much. They're good at developing relievers. They've built up a good prospect list, but the major league transactions have failed, which is why when Aaron Judge gets hurt, this looks like a 450 team.
As we look at the wild card race now, we have the Red Sox who are 2.5 games out. The Yankees are 3.5, Angels 4.5, Mariners are 5.5. Of those four, Red Sox, Yankees, Angels, Mariners, who do you think has the best chance here of getting in as you look at their schedule going forward? I keep going back, Joe, to the Red Sox. Like, they've been kind of floating around 2.5 games. Like, I think their offense is pretty solid. I've always wondered why the market has been hesitant in buying in on the Red Sox to at least make a push here into the American League wild card. Am I thinking it's the Red Sox, or is there another team that's a little bit further out that you have a little bit more faith in?
Honestly, I get the sense that the Red Sox could be holding up the trophy and their fans could be like, I don't know if we can hold on here. Maybe we should trade James Paxton.
Yeah.
Really negative thinking. But again, 2.5 out, I don't think you can sell from that position.
Yep.
Now, I'm not sure if High Blue wouldn't rather have a 7-game losing streak to make it easier. But you can't sell Paxton or Enrique Hernandez or some of the other players they have if you're this close to a playoff berth. Of that group, though, I'm sticking with my preseason pick that the Angels end up winning that final wild card. Now, they look a shambles right now. but they are going to get Rendon back. They are going to get Trout back. And as you mentioned, if they're close enough in 2 weeks, they're going to go out into the market and add some type of hitter. So I still think the Angels steal that sixth playoff spot.
I don't know if you saw me, but I was a massive fist pump. Just like, yeah, I like to see it. All right, so let's stick in the American League really quickly before we move to the National League. Rangers stumble into the All-Star break, but they have looked great since coming out. They sweep the Tampa Bay Rays. So it's a twofold question here. What did you think about Texas when they were kind of scuffling going into the break? How much has that changed at all as we have watched them play pretty well against the Rays? And how bad is this going to get for Tampa Bay, who is now tied with Baltimore for the lead in the American League East?
Yeah, I was concerned about the Rangers. I thought the Astros would catch them. It looked like I think they got to within 2 games of the Rangers before the All-Star break, and now you know they got some separation there. I didn't trust the Rangers pitching. I'm still not sure I trust the Rangers pitching. Certainly adding Aroldis Chapman helps in that bullpen, but I worry about that rotation, which isn't really filled with guys who typically go 30 starts and 200 innings. So I think they're going to have to add a starter. As far as the AL East, you know, that's a great series, by the way, starting tonight. The Rays and the Orioles battling for the top of that division. You know, if you look at the underlying numbers, the Orioles are up a percentage points. But if you look at the underlying numbers, the Rays are still the better team. And when you look at the Rays likely to get a lot of pitching back here's over the next couple of weeks, remember, they've had a ton of pitching injuries. They've got the second best record in the league, even though they've suffered all these injuries. So you look at what they're going to get coming back, and I think they're going to be able to hold off the Orioles. The X factor? The Orioles have so much talent to trade. They have like 7 infielders who could be starting right now. They can trade one or two of those guys for the pitching help that they need and not really miss the prospects. So we'll see if Mike Elias is going to be aggressive over the next couple of weeks.
Question about Tampa Bay. One of the things that has stuck out when looking at them statistically, expected fielding independent of their relievers is pretty high. It's like in the bottom 7. I think it's like 456. How much of a concern is this bullpen going to be as you move forward? I was looking over it. I think of the 13 or 14 runs scored by the Rangers in this series, 8 of them came against the bullpen for the Tampa Bay Rays. What do you make of that as a weakness for Tampa Bay, if at all?
This is where they've really felt the injuries. You know, we're used to them having this endless parade of arms to bring out. But, you know, at one point, they were down like 4 relievers. They're still down 3. We've seen Colin Poche come back and get knocked around. Kevin Kelly was pretty good at the start of the year. He's gotten knocked around lately. Jason Adam and Pete Fairbanks should be solid in the 8th and the 9th, but they haven't been. I think they're going to go into the market. If they do anything, it's trade a hitter for some relief help.
All right, as we move to the National League, I've been asking as many baseball minds as I can because we were going over some of the make-miss playoff odds yesterday, and I found it pretty surprising that a team like the Padres had better odds to make the playoffs than the Angels, who were of only 4.5 games out of the wild card. Is your faith in San Diego as strong as the market here that now 6.5 games out, they could still make a push to get back into this thing?
I think those odds reflect the weakness of the teams ahead of them. Yeah. The wild card teams in the AL are much stronger than the teams battling for those spots in the NL. So the gap between the Padres and those teams, it's 7 or 8 in the standings, but it's much less if you look at the talent base. You look at the Padres this year, too. You look at the underlying numbers. They've outperformed their record. They've had a miserable performance with runners in scoring position. They actually ran into a team that's been even worse than the Blue Jays. But I think they're going to get on one of these runs where they score 50 runs in a week, get back to what we expected them to be, and end up taking one of those playoff spots. I'm not sure what the make-miss was, but if you can get on the make there, I'm guessing it's 180, 190, something like that. I think the Padres end up making the playoffs.
Well, I think we have to look at that. It might have been a little bit stronger than that, too, so we'll have to update that. Really quick, last 60, Cincinnati Reds, and reading your newsletter, as you mentioned, they're not a fun story. They're a contender now. What have you made of this slump? Just, hey, man, it's the dog days of summer. You're going to go 3-7 at times because the slump comes in a key series, right, multiple times against the Brewers.
Right, and they have to score to win. They're really not a run prevention team. Andrew Abbott's been all right for them. Alexis Diaz, an all-star at the back of the rotation. Excuse me, at the back of the bullpen. But they have to score runs, and they have it. De La Cruz on really one of the toughest stretches he's had. Matt McClain, Spencer Steer. Still exciting, still a fun team, but they've got to score to win.
Well, what'd you say, 380 for that for the Padres?
Plus 320.
320. So there you go, 320 on the Padres to make the playoffs. I think that's worth
it. Get on it.
Yeah, all right. Joe Sheehan, at Joe_Sheehan. Joe, we appreciate it. Newsletter's awesome. It's good to talk to you, man. Thank you.
Thanks. Take care.
Yep, you got it. By the way, I mean, Joe's the second person that we've talked to here. We had Derek Cardi on over the weekend. It was the same confidence. Yeah. Like, no, look out. Padres are there. So maybe something worth looking at again when you're talking about that 3-1 range on the Padres to make the postseason. All right, we'll give you an update on what's going on in the Open Championship when we return, as we've got some big names out on the course and we are getting late into the window. That's when we come back here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Step up to the plate for BetMGM's new Swing for the Fences free-to-play game for the chance to win a prize every day this baseball season. Pick an area of the strike zone and take your best swing in this free-to-play game. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you're going to receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect the bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Swing for the Fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM Game Sense do remind you to play responsibly. 21 to wager. BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Kansas, Nevada, New York, and Ontario. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER is the number in most states in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Offer not valid to Puerto Rico residents. Back on a numbers game, Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander. If you missed our conversation with Joe Sheehan, which just happened, you can find that up on the website at VSiN.com. With that, I had a question for you. Now, I mean, you made multiple statements. Now I have multiple questions. The first of which, though, is... So you're talking about Rory McIlroy. Before I ask my question, I will ask you one more time. Watching Rory, he has done what so far?
I mean, he's missed both fairways, and he's one under par. He's missed both fairways badly,
yeah.
And he's one under par. He had a look at birdie on both holes. So I'm a little scared. I'm a little nervous right now.
So that leads to my question, which is like, look, it's only two holes, so maybe he evens out and like he's going to be fine the rest of the way. But, you know, we always talk about statistically what you're looking for signs of regression or, you know, progression, whatever. I would assume, observationally, that stuff you're looking for as well. If guys are getting by the skin of their teeth, going from rough to rough and getting in and still getting away with stuff like that, as we move forward, if he continues his round and somehow comes out on the positive side, not like over par, but like, you know, under par and has a good round, matchup-wise, are you looking to play against him? Or is that just like a one-off thing? Like, hey, he got through this round. You're going to have faith that this changes, or is this going to be his game for the weekend?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think it's a good question. He's a guy that I'm likely going to be staying away from most of the week, either betting on or against. The problem is I think those first couple holes are a great example of where Rory's game is at right now and really kind of in general. But, okay, he sprays wide of the fairway. That's a concern. That's why I crossed him off my list almost immediately this week, is he's great off the tee, but his accuracy can be a little shaky sometimes, and I just don't think you could do that at this course with my boy Tyrrell.
Tyrrell Hatton with about a 15 putt for birdie right there. 15 foot putt. There you go, one under.
All week long, baby. Let's just keep pouring him in.
Look at that neck beard. That's strong.
Oh, it's strong. It's strong. But, yeah, so I think the concern would be there's two ways to look at it. Rory's gone wide both of his first two holes. Oh, boy, you can't keep doing this all week and expect to get bailed out.
Yeah.
But the recovery game, you're also going to need to go out and win the Open Championship this week, and that's what he's been doing so far.
Yeah, back-to-back birdies, by the way, for Brian Harman as well. So he moves to 2-under, and it speaks to something that you observe. I mean, the conditions look great. There is some wind, but it doesn't look terrible. You know, even though our guy Fleetwood and the 6'8" amateur are sitting at the top of this leaderboard at -5 or 5 under. To your point about guys like Hatton before the round started, or even just sitting on a ticket for Fleetwood and others to have a first round lead, by no means are you feeling good, because the way that this course is playing, this looks like there's going to be some scoreable opportunities for these late guys, right?
I'm assuming here comes another Rory birdie because I'm looking at odds.
Nope, right there.
The book loves him. Okay, book updated. Oh, I'm sorry. I had updated tournament odds. I thought I was looking at first-round leader odds. Yeah, first-round leader, you got Lamprecht, or whatever his name is, Lamprecht, and Fleetwood +190, Rory 10-1, and then it's a drop down to 20-1. Joaquin Neiman started off really hot here.
Man, that seems strong for Rory, 10-1. First-round leader?
Yeah.
That's it. Just, again, like you said, observing what he's doing and then looking at that. And obviously, that's the fascinating part about, you know, in match markets like something like this, is a lot of it is tied to, you know, the field and where guys are at and probabilities. Not a lot of it is like looking at it, like observing what Rory's doing. It's like, let's knock that down a little bit. Let's adjust that a bit. So
the one that's tough, the other kind of tip I'll give is like, look, live betting is, I swear by it in almost any sport. Golf is one where it's great to be careful with. This tournament, there's not a lot of shot-by-shot data to be found out there. So reminder, just like kind of every other sporting event, you're on a delay, right? This is a delay. We're seeing shots. We know how, if you watch golf regularly, you know how NBC CBS does this. they not only is it on a delay, but sometimes they just want to stack highlights in a certain order so it makes sense for the narrative that they're telling on TV. Keep that in mind, but I'm looking at something, you know, what did we see? Morikawa just dunk one in, right? He's 100-1 at a first round leader right now. There's kind of some wild odds out there, but you don't know how far ahead of the action is my point from what we've seen.
Yeah. I would assume. I mean, look, we don't have. Does anybody out here offer like live in match?
Yeah, Caesars and Boyd has a live first round leader.
Okay,
and I think live outrights. Yeah.
I mean, that's for me as somebody who is listening to here. Like we always talk about like the stream and the lag on it. Like I have YouTube TV, and that makes it somewhat hard to bet in game. You're usually going to wait for commercial breaks, and then everything's already baked into the number that you're looking for. That for me would scream then betting. In-match tournaments for golf is nearly impossible. Outside of, like, coming down the home stretch where you know, like, all right, these three guys are dueling for it. We know what we're doing. Like you said, I mean, we're not seeing guys, right out there on the course. We have no idea what they're doing. We're just observing leaderboards. Like, if you wanted to live bet Matsuyama, for example, and you're just tracking the number, you have no idea what he's doing for the most part.
Right. Yeah, bad example because he's done for the day.
But no, yeah. But I'm just saying. I'm using that as an example because I didn't get to see him when I was watching today.
No, totally. Saying. Yeah, I mean, Joaquin Niemann's 2-under through 4 right now.
Yeah.
Like, you just noticed Brian Harman. They just showed him. He's 2-under through 6. Yeah, that's where you got to be careful with it. And usually, that's what I'm talking about because usually you could pull up, like, the PGA Tour app and you'll get shot-by-shot data, but it's just a course they don't play at. You don't play at regularly on the PGA Tour, so they don't have all that data added in.
All right, so again, your two leaders at 5-under, the Amateur, Lamprecht, and Tommy Fleetwood. We are seeing what others can do. Seam? Nice little man bun, whatever his name.
Marcel Seam.
Thank you. All right. Just went left pretty strongly. So keep an eye on that. Another question for you, because you did make another statement that I am curious about. You're not the biggest college football guy in the world, but you did make a Heisman bet?
Yeah, of course I made a Heisman bet. What do you think I made it on? Jordan Travis, come on.
I was going to say, Doug Brumfield, UNLV quarterback.
Now, I was having a conversation with Amal Shah on Sharp Money yesterday. I was on there to talk a little golf, and he was getting all excited about Florida State, and he was talking about possibly betting them to go undefeated through the regular season. There's some props up for that. And I was like, wow, okay. I didn't know you. I mean, I know they're supposed to. I know they're going to have a good team this year. I know Jordan Travis is a guy that, geez, I covered when he was playing high school football. What I mean, how old is he now? He played he played with Travis Homer as his running back in high school. Travis Homer's NFL career is already like come and gone.
He's 23.
it's crazy. Like how like the differences in some of these guys' careers. But Jordan Travis has been awesome. I've been expecting him to have good years at Florida State. They just haven't had the surrounding cast really in recent years to be really challenging in the ACC this year. I think you're going to get that. Maul is really confident. He thinks they're going to whoop up on LSU week one. He thinks Clemson's not going to be nearly as good as where the odds have them at. They got to go on the road and play Clemson later in the year, and then they got Miami at home this year. Those are going to be the three big games on their schedule. But I looked at it, and I was like, look, if you're betting them to go undefeated in the regular season, I'm just going to take a 14-1 on him on Heisman.
That's so for me, when it comes to Florida State, it's the same thing with LSU. I don't mean to, like, poo-poo on things, but, like, when they're so, so popular, right? LSU, Florida State.
The big-name schools like that.
Yep, yeah. And that's generally always, like, solidified into some of these numbers. You're looking for different reasons to go against it, right? And for Florida State, one of the things that stuck out to me when going over Travis' numbers is when he got to week 10 on the road against Miami, and I always stress again, like one grading metric, his passing like grade for PFF-wise and all the over and all numbers kind of tanked. He had two straight games where he had a PFF passing grade under 60. Average, I think his PFF grade through those 4 weeks was hovering right around a 60 flat. Performed really well in the bowl game against Oklahoma, but you saw a stark drop-off as the season went on with Travis, so I wonder if whatever that is, you know, maybe it's just a blip on the radar as you move into next year. And also on the thought of Clemson, I am really curious because I was like, I'm a big fan of DJ Uiagalelei and what he can be, and I'm very interested in what Oregon State's going to be, if he's going to grab that and be their guy moving forward. But on that note, part of the reason why I was high and still am is I was not overly impressed with Clemson's offensive staff and the play calling and the offense overall last season. I don't think they set up DJU for success. They overhauled the offensive staff. And so now, if everybody's right in saying that Cade Klubnik is the better quarterback and the offensive system is better and better run, well, then all of a sudden, I think Clemson is going to be a legitimate problem in the ACC overall after, you know, some downtime, I guess we'll call it, even though they've been an insanely good program. And that's the schedule for them. I mean, you get to play host to Florida State. The rest of the schedule along the way, on the road against Miami is going to be the big one, but you get Notre Dame at home. You get North Carolina at home. It's a schedule that, at the very best, sets up as well as you can if you're going to be a contender in the ACC if you're Clemson.
Well, so. And just looking at the odds and looking at all this stuff, this feels like another year. And it's been a couple years since we've had this, JVT, but kind of like you're talking about, so it feels like a whole another year where the ACC is basically going to be decided, that Clemson-FSU game in, what, week five? Week six, yeah. Like that's what it sure feels like right now.
Louisville's a good dark horse, but it does seem that it's going to come down to at least that one. All right, we'll come back. We have plenty left in our second hour here on A Numbers Game. We'll have more, of course, on the open. We'll also talk to Paul Carr, who is going to give us our preview, of course, of the Women's World Cup, which is underway. That's here on A Numbers Game, coming up in the second hour on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.